Is Intelligent Design Biblical?
Welcome to Answers News for Wednesday, January 24th, 2024.
In today's top story, West Virginia senators approved a bill allowing the discussion of intelligent design in schools. Hello, I'm Dr. Tim Chafee, and joining me today is Roger Patterson. You might know him as Mr. P, and also Avery Foley. Welcome to Answers News. Let's jump right into this. So this story tells us that the Senate Education Committee in West Virginia moved forward on an intelligent design bill. Of course, it still has to go through all the other channels that it needs to, and they passed something similar last year that then got shot down later on, but this one was tweaked a little bit, and now some of the people who were opposed to the last year's are in favor. So, Roger, what do you think about this?
It's an interesting idea, and we've had similar things. There was a big case years ago where this actually went through some very interesting trials and was ultimately turned down in various state and federal courts. And
Arkansas or Kansas?
There's one in Arkansas, and then the Dover case was the big one. So it's been attempted in multiple places and ultimately shot down, but this is another state trying to bring those things to bear. And as we look at the language that's being applied here, these legislators are really trying to take God, the God of the Bible, out of the picture here by bringing this to a very neutral plane. And when you think about an intelligent designer, most Christians are going to think, well, they're talking about God. But that's one of the concerns that we have as a ministry when we start thinking about intelligent design is, as it's very explicitly stated here, one of the students who addressed the senators and is dealing with these things, Hodge reminded them that ID is, quote, agnostic, meaning it only proposes some kind of consciousness behind the design of the universe. And he goes on to talk about it could mean anything from the God of the Bible to the flying spaghetti monster, which the atheists have proposed as the Pastafarians, as they're known, proposing this being who started everything, which really isn't a being. They just put that up as a nonsense idea. So intelligent design is the idea that there's some intelligence behind the universe, but it doesn't say who that intelligence is. So these legislators are saying, well, let's throw out that idea that it's not just random chance that started all these things in this evolutionary process, but we'll teach the evolution in the classroom and say that it could have been an intelligence behind it and not leave that idea out. So they're trying to be inclusive, but that's really not what's happening, is it?
Not really. They go on to talk about how all logical reasons and explanations should be allowed. But then, of course, who determines what is logical or, a reasonable explanation? Because they go on to talk about how one of the senators was concerned about the phrase scientific theories being in the bill. And he's like, well, maybe that's too restrictive. It could exclude the discussion of creation. And then one of the students that's been involved with putting this bill forward, he's like, well, we want that to be in there because we're not talking about religion here. The goal is to permit the discussion of intelligent design, not religion at this point, is what the student said. Forgetting, of course, that evolution is part of the religion of naturalism and atheism and all that. But again, they're not really allowing for, they claim they want this academic freedom, not really allowing for all different views. Just, no, maybe we can say that there was an intelligent designer, but that intelligent designer could be an alien. That intelligent designer could be anything, not necessarily the biblical God. So intelligent design certainly does not go far enough because it says, yeah, maybe there's something that helped or guided, or that doesn't get you to the creator God of the Bible, who is a personal God. He's not just some, deity out there that's way separated from his creation that maybe just helped a little bit. That's not the God of the Bible. So this doesn't really get you there, which is why we understand it, like we use God's creation, obviously, to point people toward the creator. Romans 1 is very explicit that God's creation points people towards him. But we don't stop there. We go to, no, this is what the Word of God says, and we use the history God has given us as a lens to look at the world, which is very different than what intelligent design does.
Yeah, so we certainly agree there is intelligent design. God is the ultimate intelligent designer. He knows everything, so he is the ultimate intelligence. So we agree with that. We agree with many of the intelligent design arguments, if you will, not the strategy, because we think if you stop short of telling them who the designer is, we haven't done our job, because we need to introduce people to the designer, and that's our Lord Jesus Christ. And so it stops short of the goal. It's great if you have somebody who looks at the world through an atheistic view. If suddenly they say, you know what, I think these guys are right. There is a creator, but he doesn't know who that creator is, and we never tell him. Yeah. He's still got the same future ahead of him eternally.
And two other big problems. There are some of the fine-tuning arguments that get used that actually promote ideas like the Big Bang, because the Big Bang contradicts the biblical account of how things happened in the creation week and how God created everything. So you can't have the Big Bang and the Genesis account of creation. Those two contradict each other. And many unassuming Christians will use the fine-tuning arguments that are put forward by these intelligent design proponents, and they'll say, oh, look at all these fine-tuning arguments. And they'll really be promoting the Big Bang.
Particularly when it comes to the solar system.
They don't know that they're promoting the Big Bang. I run into that all the time with people. Second, a lot of these things that are the theories of the origins of life aren't theories at all, even in the scientific sense. So these legislators talking about this don't really know what they're talking about from a scientific sense, because we can't have a theory of the origin of life, because a theory has to be something that's testable and has been proved over time and is a reliable way that can be demonstrated to be true in all different circumstances. There are no theories of the origin of life in the scientific sense. There are some ideas or some hypotheses about the origin of life in the evolutionary sense, but all of the ideas about the origin of life, whether it's aliens did it or it evolved through these different, the RNA hypothesis or the soup model or the bubble model, all these different models that they have in the evolutionary view, or whether God created, as we read about in Genesis 1, those are all faith-based views. And we acknowledge that. We take that by faith. But we look at that as an axiomatic position. It's our starting point. Mm-hmm. But the naturalists, the atheists, have to do the same thing. The evolutionists have to do the same thing. It's their starting point. They have to assume naturalism is true to make all those things happen. So all of those views are faith-based systems, like Avery was pointing to earlier. They're all faith-based systems, and they're rejecting our faith-based system in the public schools. But that doesn't mean we want them to be teaching the biblical view in the public schools, because they wouldn't do a very good job of that.
Right. I was going to ask Avery, had that been our position? Because we're accused of that.
We're accused all the time. That's what we're trying to do. We've never, ever tried to do that. Think about you teaching evolution in public schools when you were a public school science teacher. If you'd been told to also present biblical creation, would you have done a fair job of it? Probably not.
I didn't. I wouldn't have wanted to.
Right.
I thought evolution was the right way to think about things.
And you'd probably say, well, how come I'm not required to teach the Hindu view of creation, and why not this view?
And we hear that view all the time.
Yeah.
And we've actually written about those topics in some of our Answers Book series. You can find the question about intelligent design in Answers Book 2, and then the question about the public schools in Answers Book 3. So we've got great resources to deal with those things as well.
But we do believe that if evolution is going to be required to be taught, it should be taught warts and all.
There's a lot of problems with it. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, Roger used the word axiomatic. That wins as far as the coolest word. So we're going to move on to our next article, see who wins this one. All right. So there is a paradigm shift. Evolution is not as random as we thought. Now, this was a fairly confusing article because the headline tells us not as random, but at the same time, later on, it's like, well, we can't say that it's guided, but we don't want to say that it's random, and it's...
There's no goal. There's no purpose.
It's not directed.
But it's not random, but it's not.
So what is it? And it reminded me of, it was Richard Dawkins who talked, somebody was asking about design, and he said, well, of course it looks designed. That's what we would expect if evolution were true. And it's like, I don't know if that's word for word, but, like, but again, why are they doing this?
It's a very interesting attempt to try to get around things that look, as you look out into the world. Avery mentioned Romans 1, the invisible attributes of God are seen clearly in all that we look at out there in creation. We look at the world and it looks designed. But it can't be, because evolution, their natural system for how things came to be, has to be a random process that started all these things in the beginning. Okay, there can't be a purpose or a goal. And it can go forward, it can go backward. There's no higher organisms or lower organisms. They just are. And so as we start to talk through these things, they want to avoid that type of language. But then they examined systems like this, and they took this bacterial genome, and they analyzed 2,500 different organisms, the whole genome of these 2,500 different bacteria within the same genus. And then they looked at them and saw these patterns developing where these genes control regions were linked to each other, and they saw these very clear patterns within this pangenome of this bacteria and said, wow, that looks like these things are not happening randomly as they're interacting in the environment. And of course, because the information that's coded for there in the DNA can't just happen by chance. So the origination of that DNA wasn't random. And if they believe it was random in the first place, then everything that comes from it has to be, in some sense, random. It can't just happen with purpose. If what began it was random. So they wind up in this circle, in this confusing mess, where they want to say parts of the system wind up not being random, but the beginning was random, and the end is random. But so they just get confused in the middle.
I'm confused. Yes. Avery, clarify.
It's interesting. As you're reading through this, like the headline is, you know, evolution is not as random. They keep talking about evolution. But what you see in the actual science, when you look at the actual science that they did studying the genome, there's no evolution. They didn't observe new genes popping into existence. They looked at genes that already exist, grouped the genes into gene families, compared those different gene families, saw how they interacted with other gene families as if this whole thing was complex and intricately designed. And then they were like, oh, the genome isn't random. It's a complex ecosystem just in the genome of this bacteria. So they're not observing any evolution. There's no change. The bacteria remain bacteria. The genome isn't you know, getting new functional information out of nowhere. It's just observational science. They're just observing the genome and then calling it evolution and trying to apply that to evolution when it really has nothing to do with the organism changing into anything else. It's a bacteria that stayed a bacteria and is just more complex than we thought it was. And that has exciting applications. They talk about some of those applications. And interestingly, when they talk about the scientific applications, it's all observational science. It's all like medicine and things where creationists and evolutionists are both going to agree, because that's observational science, is directly testable, observable, repeatable in the lab, not talking about the past or history.
Or one kind of organism changing into a different kind. So
you're saying the simple organism is incredibly complex.
Incredibly.
It sounds like it's been intelligently designed.
It really
does. Can we tell people who the intelligent designer is?
We can.
I think we can.
All right, yeah.
The God of the Bible.
That's right. And Avery was talking about some of the things they were talking about that they could use this for. And we were in the green room, we were talking about this a little bit. One of the things they talk about is manipulating genetic material, and that can sound really scary, and it can be, if depending on how you use that.
Technology,
but it can also be used
for
a wonderful thing. We know somebody whose child was born with SCID. You know, he had no immune system back in the 70s and 80s. It might have been like a bubble boy situation. Well, now they have a new technology. They're able to harvest some of his own stem cells, send him off to be manipulated a little bit, send him back, implant his own cells so you don't have any rejection or anything, and suddenly starts developing immunity and an immune system. What an amazing use of technology and observational science, not an evolutionary view of historical or origin, better to say origin science, not really historical because it didn't happen.
Yep.
All right. Well, another fun one in the realm of evolution. So we got a whole bunch of articles that Roger just loves today. A wild hypothesis suggests insect wings arose from gills. I bet you didn't know that. So you're going to learn something today. So this has to do with like dragonfly and damselflies and others. And so again, Roger, I'm going to go to you. Avery, you're going to get one coming up here soon. The next one.
All right. So go to the next slide there. Yeah. So this is the image of the fossil that they're looking at. And this is a group of scientists out of the Czech Republic. So they found these cool fossils, and their suggestion is, this is a totally new hypothesis, that these small structures that they are seeing here near what are the gills in this small insect larva. Now, a lot of insect larvae grow in the water. They're aquatic, and then they emerge out of the water, and then they'll take off. So things like dragonflies and damselflies and mayflies, they live in the water, and then they'll emerge. We do fun activity here. We call it Unlocking Science on the Spot. We do it out on the patio, and kids and families come up and we look at these things underneath the microscope and show the life cycle of the dragonflies and damselflies. And you can see the gills on these things. They're underwater. They got to breathe. So they've got gills. So these gills you can, that are pointed out here in these fossilized creatures, the idea is the gills were actually formed up on the thorax of this, creature. And they turned into the wings up on the thorax. So something like the gill structure evolved into the wings up on the thorax. And this is admittedly, by these scientists, although our fossils certainly do not represent the ancestor of winged insects, they are larvae and the adults of this group already had fully functional wings. So if they're not the ancestor, they're up here in the evolutionary tree, and dragonflies and damselflies are up here, then that means that with, go to the next slide for me, Tim, dragonflies and damselflies and mayflies, their gills actually are on the base of their abdomen. So I tell the kids when they come up, God made crazy creatures that breathe through their bums. Okay. That's where their gills are, those three
all
feathers.
The little boys think that's hilarious.
They love
of course. That's cool.
And all the moms are like, did you really just tell my kid
yes,
that?
Yes, I did. Okay. Those three little feathery structures sticking out the back end, that's the gills. Okay, those are the gills, and that's how they breathe. So if it evolved from the gills in one line on the evolutionary tree, and it evolved from the gills in this other, it couldn't have done both, okay, or the wings would grow out of the abdomen on one and the other. So they have to propose that the wings evolved in two different ways in these two different lineages, and it just complicates how wings evolved in insects.
Which they already don't know.
Which they already don't know how. So now they've got to explain how wings evolved at least twice. And I think, and as I was researching Evolution Exposed books, I think they already say wings evolved like six different times. Mm-hmm. But now we've got to do it twice in just this group of very similar aquatic insects. So it's just complicating their own problem. So I think they're throwing a wrench into their own gearbox here.
Nice. I think so, too. As Roger was talking about, evolved six different ways, like the wings or but that's just for the insects.
Just the insects.
Because butterflies are entirely different than these, and then you also have reptiles, so you got like the pteranodon flying reptiles.
Yeah.
They have to evolve differently. You've got mammals like bats, they have to evolve
birds,
differently. Birds,
yeah.
And there's all sorts of different flight mechanisms for birds.
Wait a minute, no, because they believe birds are reptiles, so.
Well, the hummingbird does not fly like the velociraptor supposedly did. Very different creatures. So,
what's interesting, too, when I was looking at this, was just thinking about the fact that we have these fossils preserved. These little teeny tiny insect larvae are preserved as these amazing fossils that they can actually look at and see gills on them. And that just reminds us of the global flood and how quickly that things were happening, so catastrophic that these little tiny insects could be preserved for us to look at. They're not 300 million years old, like they say here. They were buried during the flood just a few thousand years ago. But really neat to just be reminded of the catastrophic nature of the flood in these cool insect fossils.
And what she's getting at is that if you're not familiar with it, a lot of times we're taught that fossils form, you know, creature dies and sits there on the ground, and then it's slowly buried, it decays. But we know when that happens, it decays, it rots. And birds, other things will eat it, and suddenly it's gone. There's no fossil there. But this, because it's buried rapidly, you can get you get fossilization. It does not take a long time. It takes the right conditions. All right, Avery, we're coming to you on this one. So, are you surprised by this? 49 of 50 states saw increased gender dysphoria diagnoses between 2018 and 2022.
I am not surprised.
Why is that?
At all. Because anyone who paid any attention to what's happened in the world in the last 4, 5, 6 years, you would know that this has been pushed insanely heavily through not just the public education system, but through social media with like the hashtag trans, for example. I think it was back in 2021, was viewed like 6 billion times on TikTok. Like, young people in particular are consuming transgender stories and all that kind of content on social media at an alarming rate. And then, of course, it's being pushed into school. It's sort of the new cool thing to do. It's boring to be.
Professionals themselves.
Yep. Yeah. So it's no surprise that we're seeing in 49 of 50 states, the only state where it did not rise is South Dakota, where they have actually made those surgeries, the genital mutilation surgeries, and all those drugs and everything illegal. It has not risen there.
For minors,
yes. But in other states, it's every single other state, it's been rising. And that's no surprise given how popular it is and how much it's being pushed everywhere. And sadly, in young people in particular, we see these rises as people are searching for an identity, searching for a purpose, searching for something they can grab onto because they don't have God. They don't have his word. They don't have an identity grounded in who they are, made in the image of God, fearfully and wonderfully by him, made as a male, made as a female, with a purpose. Instead, they've just been taught, well, you're just the result of random chance. Well, maybe not so random processes over millions and millions of years. You're just an animal. There is no ultimate purpose. There is no God who's given you a purpose and has a plan for your life, any of that. And they're just searching, and this is the new thing that's trying to fill that void. But ultimately, it just leads to hopelessness and purposelessness.
Yeah, and the hope that we can truly point all of these people to is that they do have value, they do have worth, and it's not in changing the outside to match what the inside feels like, because that's just distorting reality to match what the brokenness of sin has caused our feelings to align with anyway. So that's making brokenness match with brokenness. We need to come to realize what the true reality is. And we think back to what Adam did in the garden that brought sin into the world and has corrupted all of creation. That's not just broken the world around us. It's broken the world inside of us. And we need to point them to that reality. And the gospel message is that sin has come into the world and in the first Adam, and that the last Adam, Jesus Christ, has come to restore that. And all of these, we look at the states, and it detailed how this set of states had a range of hundreds of percent increase in this state, this hundreds. And that's not the most important thing. We can focus on those things and think through policies and conditions, but it's really us as individuals, members of the church, and reaching out with the hope of the gospel, pointing them to the fact that our true identity is as image bearers of God and having a restored relationship with our Creator through what Christ has done with us, that the work of the Holy Spirit in Christians restoring us into that Christ-like image is where we're going to find the right way to relate to God, the right way to relate to other image bearers. And that's where that true restored identity is going to be found.
Yeah, I like that. Roger said that it's not transforming the outside. No, it's really what you're talking about, the transforming of the inside.
Yeah.
That's what really needs to be done. So we're one of the things we're doing here is we're working on an exhibit for the Creation Museum on identity and what that means and who we really are to address these issues in our culture and help people understand that when we do go right back to Genesis, we find out the reality of who human beings are. We're people made in God's image, and he made us as male and female, and he didn't make a mistake when he did that. It's prevalent from social media influencers, music, movies, and last year's highest grossing film, one that I know you kind of have some warm spots of feelings about, Barbie movie.
No, don't go that far.
Barbie movie includes a trans actor as a Barbie.
That's all I said.
She loved it. No, I'm just kidding. She saw some of the problems too.
I helped them review it for the Tilt Shift, their show on.
That's why I'm teasing her. All right.
We're going to the bus. All the comments are going to be so negative. Thanks, Tim.
You're welcome. Yeah, she loved it. No. All right. Well, let's move on to talk about a very cool little creature here. This is a peculiar pink fairy armadillo, and they have a weird double skin that's not seen in any other mammal. And so this is something from down in Argentina, down in southern South America. And
just a tiny little, like six inches long, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
Little.
Well, Argentina used the metric.
15 centimeters.
You're from Canada. There you go. She can do it. All right. So, Roger, why is it so strange that it would have two? I mean, you got to really be glad that evolution gave it two sets of skin.
Yeah, that's one of the things. As you're reading through the article here, it describes this very interesting situation. So it's got the dermal scales across the back. Think about an armadillo that they typically think they roll up into the ball and protect themselves. And so these dermal scales that are embedded in the skin. And this one has this unique situation where near the rear, there's this casing, and then there's a fold there where there is a second layer of skin hiding underneath that layer. So it's not seen in any other mammal that we know of. So just a unique finding. You'd think we've been studying animals now and trying to understand. We think we'd stop finding new stuff, but there's always new stuff to explore, stuff that God has provided for these animals, ways that they've adapted to their environments and done things. And as the evolutionary little nugget gets thrown in here, it's
because they couldn't not. They had to put it in there.
The evolution towards a completely subterranean lifestyle in the fairy armadillo's ancestral lineage is limited or estimated to take place between 32 and 17 million years ago. Well, they got it narrowed right down.
Yeah.
And so they've got to throw in those ideas because that's their worldview that this article is being presented from. And the adaptations, the abilities that God has programmed into the DNA, that information piece in every living thing, is just amazing. And the ability to provide this, the sandy soils are in the things. There's maybe some abrasion resistance. Something's happening there. And I just think it's awesome. So kids out there who are listening, I encourage kids in my Unlocking Science program. These are things we can keep exploring. We're going to keep understanding more and more and more about God's amazing creation because He has an unlimited mind to think of ways for things to happen. We're never going to figure it all out.
So Roger mentioned Unlocking Science, and one thing that we talk about throwing ideas in there, get Answers TV, because that's our streaming platform that we have. And you have Mr. P over here who does, if you want to learn how damselflies breathe through their bums and other things like that and all these cool, fun things, then you got to check out that program. And so great for families. And Avery's got a program for families as well called Shoes Off. And mine is, it's still family, Tilt Shift it's called, but it's still for families, but a little
not geared
toward
3 to 8 year old like my
not
show.
Not so much 3 to 8. Analyzing the worldviews thrown that are pushed in Hollywood films. So, all right, Avery, anything to add other than this thing's cute?
It's very cute, and I thought it was interesting also that the armadillo has these flexible hairs that actually help it, they think, to move through the underground tunnels. Which, again, is just a really cool design feature that God enabled them. Living underground where, obviously, it's dark, your eyes aren't going to help you a whole lot getting around. They have flexible hairs that help them move through the tunnels. I'm very thankful the Lord did not give us that. That would be so aggravating to have your hair like sending things up. But for the fairy pink armadillo, the pink fairy armadillo rather, it's a really good design. It's really just neat to see the amazing intricacies of God's creation everywhere we look, from really large things down to really small things and everything in between. It's just
people
it's amazing.
Who followed Answers in Genesis for a while might remember this. Buddy Davis would always say, "It's designed to do what it does do, and what it does do well." And that's good.
Yep.
It's God has created these creatures with amazing abilities.
Yep. And lots of those in this great book.
Oh, lots of fun.
Awesome facts about animals. If you just like cool things that critters do, they're in here. So check that book out. Great resource for your family.
All right. Well, speaking of cool critters, well, or make-believe cool critters.
If you didn't have enough reasons to visit Kentucky because of the Creation Museum and the Ark Encounter, we will give you another one.
Mark your calendar 80 years from now.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Lexington, for this. Hey, aliens, look at Lexington. So Visit Lex invites extraterrestrial travelers to Lexington, Kentucky with the world's first interstellar. So they
beam the signal out into space.
I've seen movies where this is not a good idea. But
Lexington,
80 years from now, I'm going to be gone. I don't care. So.
Who knows what will happen? It'll take 40 years for the signal to get to this solar system, which is the TRAPPIST, TRAPPIST-1 solar system, which is going to take 40 years for it to get there. And then will the aliens come visit Lexington?
If there are any aliens there.
Maybe they'll come visit the Ark Encounter, you know?
Maybe.
Well, I mean, so there's always this fear that aliens that could come and visit if they existed, that they would be more powerful than us because they have the technology to do that, so we have to be afraid. But you can probably rest easy because we sent them the recipe for bourbon, so they might be too drunk to come and do it.
Yeah, all the advertising is about horses and bourbon. Come see our horses and come drink our bourbon. That was all that. I looked at the
webpage. That's what they sent the aliens. Yeah.
So down at the bottom of the webpage, there's a counter about how many days it'll be until the
years and days.
It's a genius marketing ploy. It's really clever. I don't think we have to worry about it. But one of the things, the reason we joke about it, and I mean, it is kind of silly, but our culture is inundated with this idea of alien life, that there is intelligent alien life out there. Of course, there's the joke, I haven't seen a whole lot of intelligent life here. But but why would that be an issue from a biblical perspective? So the Bible never comes right out and says there are no aliens on other planets. But what it does tell us is that God created the Earth first. the sun, moon, and stars and the other planets presumably are on day four. So they're not the focal point of what God is doing. God sent his son to become a man, a descendant of Adam, to the earth. He didn't go to Mars to die for the Martians. He came
or
to...
TRAPPIST-1.
Right, or TRAPPIST-1 for them.
He's a trapeze artist.
He died once for sin. So it's not like he's going to go to Mars and die for the Martians, Jupiter die for the people there. So there are problems with it theologically. It doesn't make sense that he would have done that. Is he powerful enough? Of course. Could he have done it if he wanted to? Of course. But every indication in Scripture that he gives us is that he didn't. So that's how we look at that issue. And we've got a great program on that in our planetarium. So while you're here at the Creation Museum, you can check out the UFOs or what's the name of Aliens?
Aliens Factor Fiction.
Yeah, there it is. Aliens Factor Fiction.
Yeah, but we encourage people to come visit Kentucky, too. It's a great state. You'll love it. The Ark Encounter and Creation Museum are amazing. So you can come, and you can even go to Lexington and see the cool things they have there, which aren't aliens at this point.
And if you're looking for a good time to come, well, come July 21st and 22nd. We've got Answers for Educators. This is our conference. I think it was just one day last year, so we're expanding it to 2 days. And we've also got a homeschool event May 9th through the 11th. And so that is the theme this year, Stand Parenting Kids to Face the Giants.
Yeah, I'll be doing
not like
program.
Roger and Tim Giants. So you're not supposed to throw stones at us or anything like that.
I've got a new program be launching called Up in the Air. So instead of up in flames, it'll be up in the air this year. So
that's
cool. Lots of fun.
I'm launching a new one too, Fearfully and Wonderfully Me, which is obviously Fearfully and Wonderfully Made for Little Kids. So I'll be presenting at the homeschool experience too.
All right. Are you going to be showing off your new Fearfully and Wonderfully Made one at that point?
My little, 6-week-old baby. We'll see whether baby cooperates or not.
All right. Well, we are out of time for today. We thank you for joining us. And until next time, God bless you.
See ya.